This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by the Dan Bongino Show, heard weekday mornings, 9 to noon. I'll be filling in tomorrow for Dan Bongino, so you get 6 hours of Jason Rants, although in this case, it's not back-to-back like when I fill in for Ben. So you get a little bit of a break in between, but I hope you'll tune in. Lots of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? National.
We're getting some new details as to the timeline as to how the Salvador Ramos mass murderer or mass murder spree unfolded in Uvalde, Texas. We can tell you now that according to police, the elementary school door was unlocked when he entered, and he did not have any interaction with anyone, any resistance with law enforcement or security, which apparently wasn't actually there at the time. And we knew some of this info, or we were reporting some of it as what we were hearing on the ground. Now it's been confirmed. He did not have any resistance as he went into a classroom where he murdered 19 children and, of course, 2 teachers. So the door was unlocked. He crashed his pickup truck into a ditch. He fired at 2 people outside of a funeral home that's right by the school. He then went towards the school at 11:40 a.m. He fired numerous shots and then walked in, not confronted by a school resource officer. Once inside the building, he walked into a hallway. He made his way into a classroom. 4 minutes later is when the police arrived. They hear gunfire. They take gunfire. They move back and get cover. And at that point, they say they try to approach where the suspect was. Now, the officers who were there had called for backup, additional resources, because they knew what was going on. And as they were doing that, they were also helping kids and teachers in nearby classrooms actually evacuate the building. At that point, we're told that a Zavala County deputy and members of the Uvalde Police Department eventually entered the classroom, killing the suspect. Now, there are still some questions that he attempted to answer, and he answered some. But there are still questions because there is video that has been getting a lot of play on social media showing parents effectively begging the police to enter the school and save their kids.
Look, they're just all parked and outside, man. They need to go in there.
Get in. What the is the deal, dude? There's kids. Oh, man. I'm going to go.
Look at that, bro. They're all in there. The cops ain't doing but standing outside.
All the kids are inside the school and they're just standing.
And you can obviously understand their anger and anxiety and fear. You can understand it. Any parent would hold that position because at the time, they didn't know what was going on inside. And according to a new report, according to a Houston outlet, an 11-year-old reportedly smeared blood on herself from her dead classmates in order to pretend that she had been killed so that she wouldn't, in fact, be killed. Now, before people jump to any conclusions on the timeline here, even though I certainly acknowledge there seems to be some holes, it doesn't quite make sense to me. Understand that they're likely withholding still some information because this investigation is ongoing. And when, even though I know that every single parent out there would say, if my kid was in there and I was able to, I would rush inside no matter what the risk to save my son, to save my daughter. I get that. Cops can't always just do that. Cops can't always just do that because it's possible that at the time, the gunman had already barricaded himself into that classroom. And them just storming in and risking him shooting at them and then them having to return fire meant the kids and the staff that they were still trying to get out of the building could have been in harm's way. It's possible that there were live students that he was holding hostage when this was happening. Now, again, I don't know if that's the case. I just know that when police arrive to an active shooting, they can't just merely run in blind when there are still potential victims who could become victims because they ran inside. Now, it doesn't mean that they would never do that. It doesn't mean that always you stay, but I do know that you secure a scene first. And it's pretty clear from at least the way some folks are talking, because, of course, this then dives into the just the insufferable Twitter arguments of people. Oh, defund? No, abolish. They're useless. Just shut up. Just go away. Go somewhere else. Stay in your mom's basement where you belong. If there was any hesitancy that cost lives and any procedure that wasn't followed, we will find out and we should find out. But I'm not willing at this point to just throw a whole bunch of cops under the bus because some timelines don't quite match up yet. They don't match up based on the information that's publicly available. That doesn't mean that it won't match up, and it doesn't mean that it will. I think it's very valid to ask these kinds of questions. The question will always become, should 21 people have died? Because you've got survivors like this fourth grader who spoke with KENS-TV. He gives you some details as to what he witnessed.
Shut the our next person's door, and then we have a door in the middle, and he opened it, and then he came in and he crouched a little bit and he said, it's time to die. When he shot, it was very loud and it hurt my ear. When I saw the bullets on the floor, it was real.
So he went up. This is a monster, right? This is a monster to go up to a child and say, it's time to die. You can have the conversations all you want and the arguments about gun control and let's do it, I guess. But let's not pretend that this is just some normal person. This is a psychopath. This is a mentally ill psychopath. I don't know if he showed signs that we should have caught. That reporting hasn't been done yet. It hasn't been put out. We know he's been bullied, but bullying doesn't lead to something like this. Bullying doesn't lead to going into an elementary school and murdering babies.
And when I heard the shooting through the door, I told my friend to hide under something so he won't find us. I was hiding hard, and I was telling my friend to not talk because he's going to hear us. The cop said, help if you need help. And then one of the persons in my class said, help. The guy overheard, and he came in and shot her. And then the cops barged in into that classroom, and the guy shot the cops, and the cops just started shooting.
So very clearly, as the witness pointed out, this poor kid, the cops did engage. The cops did go in. There's just a question as to when.
Just opened the curtain, and then I just put my hand out, and then I got out with my friends because I knew it was the police when I saw the armor and the shield.
So thankfully, this 9-year-old boy was able to survive. Unfortunately, many of his classmates didn't.
I would like to say for every kid and parents to be safe.
So, you know, you hear that, and obviously that's breaking your heart as you hear this poor kid having to recall what happened. And it's almost, you can sort of get a sense just from the tone that I don't want to say he's broken, but obviously he's still in shock. You can hear it in his voice. And this kid's life is forever changed. And while people are sniping at each other politically, you've got this boy and so many others who went through what they went through just wanting to get some sort of comfort. And I can tell you for certain that the political sniping from Republicans and Democrats at each other, that's definitely not going to help. That doesn't prevent any future shootings. And the reality of the situation is you're not going to be able to prevent every single crime. You can't. I wish we lived in the world that we can do that, but we can't. And so the question becomes, what can you do? What policies can you implement? What changes you can make, maybe without even having to change any policy, that makes this less likely to be successful, to mitigate the risks? There are a lot of people who are just going to lie and say, we got to make sure this never happens again. You can't make sure it never happens again. You can't make sure it never happens again. Well, we can ban guns. Yeah, I mean, you could. Let's say you ban guns. Okay, so no one will be killed again. Children will never be murdered. There will never be a mass murder. When we're talking about children or the elderly, people who are in a hospital, they are vulnerable, not being able to protect themselves, not against an 18-year-old or a 43-year-old, no matter the weapon that they have. So what can we do to ensure that if someone attempts this again, he or she won't be as successful? Or what can we do to ensure that someone might feel a disincentive to even contemplate something like this? Understanding, however, we live in a world in which there are sick, crazy people. I don't know how many people could listen to that boy explain what this monster did and say that that is a rational, reasonable person, who the only reason he committed this vile act was because he had access to a weapon. Does anyone believe that? Do you believe someone who can hear a girl say, "I need help," and then murder her on the spot? Do you think that that's the kind of person who is not going to find a way to do this kind of damage just in a different way with a different weapon? Do you truly believe that? That doesn't mean you don't have a conversation about what can be done on guns or what can be done on anything. But let's be clear. This kid very clearly was a monster. I'm glad he's dead. The only downside to that is we have a harder time figuring out the why. Now, maybe he left some paper trail explaining beyond those three Facebook posts that were made about 15 minutes before he went in. So there was, it's not like that would be spread widely enough that cops could hear about it quickly. So, you know, we'll get more answers here as the investigation goes on. I implore people not to just rush and say the cops are wrong here. I don't know. Maybe they were. Maybe they weren't. Based on, the, you know, what I know about crime scenes in general, I'm always hesitant to, well, the cop is seen arresting one of the parents. Yeah, what if the parent wanted to run in risking her life and the lives of other kids? You have to take that into consideration. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to join the conversation, send me a text. Don't forget, tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., I'm filling in for the Dan Bongino Show. It's syndicated, so if you have any friends who live outside of this area, tell them to tune in to their local affiliate. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Activists, bicyclists, and pedestrians painted a crosswalk in the neighborhood of Greenwood in Seattle. And almost immediately, the Department of Transportation came in and was all like, "No, no, 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 you do not do this. We are scraping this bad boy." So they got rid of it. And of course, the activists are mad. Now, when we're talking about these kinds of activists, the bicyclists and the pedestrians, they are always mad. They are always mad. That's why we call them militant. The militant bicyclists, the militant pedestrians who believe that they own every inch of road, because did you know that they're heroes for not driving a car?
Everyone is a hero.
But they're especially.
Okay. They earned heroes. It?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
We can add that to the list after postal workers. These are folks who are heroes. And the truth is, as I was reading the story in the Seattle Times, I found myself at least saying, I'm kind of leaning, I wouldn't probably say this out loud, but I'm leaning in the direction of understanding the activists, like I was kind of on their side, until there was this one quote in the stupid story that completely turned me over.
It's always one quote
with
you.
It's always the one thing. It's just, it triggered me. So here's, let's just set up the stage. It is not a standard crosswalk that they put in. You know how those white lines are usually small? These are really fat. These are like piano keys. Now, they're all even. It's evenly spaced out. The paint, I don't think, was the right kind of paint you're supposed to use. You have to use a special kind of paint.
The reflective stuff, yeah. So it's seen at night.
Yeah. So just understand that. We don't know who did it. No one has come forward to take credit. Seattle Times says the spokesperson for Seattle Department of Transportation, Ethan Bergson, poor guy who always has to respond to my emails. I feel so bad for him sometimes. He said the city plans to install a permanent crossing there, which is part of a designated bike route to and from Green Lake. It will include signage and traffic signals, and installation should begin in the next several months. But residents of Greenwood said they've been told for years now a crossing was coming, but have yet to see any progress. It was originally supposed to be built in 2021, but delays related to COVID-19 and the supply chain, as well as labor being diverted to the West Seattle Bridge, pushed it down the road. Now, all of that is understandable in a world that SDOT is usually on top of things.
Yeah,
and they're
stop,
pretty slow.
Stop blaming COVID.
Well, this was supposed to happen during COVID, like at the in late 2020, early 2021. So you can make some reasonable arguments that COVID, not directly on this one project, but it probably pushed a lot of things, and you have to go back. There's a backlog. This is not the only project that was pushed along. And we can also all acknowledge that the West Seattle Bridge is more important than a stupid crosswalk in and bike lane in Greenwood.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm pretty sure.
A bridge
yeah.
that probably commutes millions
yeah.
back and forth compared to this crosswalk
well,
for bicyclists.
Millions, dummy.
There's At not- some point, a million people are going to cross it.
Okay.
See,
only 717,000 people who live in all of Seattle. They all don't. Just okay, fine.
At some point,
your hyperbole aside, clearly that's more important. But I also understand what the folks in the community are saying, which is, hey, you've been promising this for a very long time. You're not doing it, and since we put in this fake crosswalk, we've noticed, and this is anecdotal, we've noticed that drivers are slowing down a little bit. Because they see the crosswalk, which to them indicates, oh, a human being might be crossing at some point. And they've said, hey, it's safer for us as pedestrians just walking across the street, not having to worry as much because people are already starting to slow down. Or the bicyclists are saying it's easier for us to cross. Now, once you get into the bicyclists want this, I always tend to go in the opposite direction. But again, up until this point, I was saying I kind of understand their perspective. However, then you find out in this story, SDOT had created, had built a crosswalk one block north of this spot. Not 1 mile, one block. These are not large blocks. Okay?
What, one block?
One block north.
Like a walkable block.
If you could crawl it and be at the end of the block in 30 seconds.
Oh.
I mean, you'd have to probably crawl a little bit fast, but...
That's nice of SDOT.
Then they quote some guy named Scott. Scott is a bicyclist, and he's probably the kind in the Lycra outfit and that stupid helmet that looks like a banana.
But it's really good cap.
And no, he's got that. He's got the pants that have the padded on the padding on the butt.
Yeah,
because it hurts when you bike as much as he does. Because he's a warrior.
But not good calves.
No, weirdly he has really weird calves.
Huh.
I didn't want to ask any questions. In my head, that's what he looks like. And weirdly, also out of shape. They're always kind of out of shape, too. Especially.
I mean, it's the lower half that's in. Usually they got good thighs, good calves, and then nothing else going
this,
on.
This is the quote he gave to the Seattle Times. The suggestion that you should use a different crossing than the one that makes sense for your path is one that we ascribe to pedestrians and bikers only. Hey, dummy, have you ever driven in any other part of Seattle? Ever? Have you gone into downtown Seattle? Have you gone into South Lake Union? Have you gone into parts of Capitol Hill? Stop this garbage take. Have you driven to West Seattle? You're telling me that, oh, we only tell pedestrians and bicyclists that they have to go out of their way to get to their destination. First of all, it's a block. Second of all, you don't have one-way streets that you're dealing with on your bike lane. That make no sense whatsoever. Or a whole bunch of bike lanes that get in the way of cars, which make it even more difficult for you to do something. You don't live in a world in which you even follow any of the basic laws. So shut your stupid face with your stupid helmet, you stupid bicyclist. Other than that, I support everything you say, and I think you're a great, wonderful person. That's it.
No, that was good. Okay, I like that. You. I support everything that you just
am
said.
Am I right wrong there? To, no. to just immediately get turned off when I read that quote?
No, and I mean, it's
That is the
so...
snobbiest... most elitist, most bicyclist kind of thing to say. Oh my gosh, I have to go one extra. You're on a bike, you idiot. You're doing that because you want the exercise with your flabby upper body, by the way.
Bicyclists are so entitled.
I hate bicyclists so much. I hate them. I hate them so much.
What about bicyclists who listen to AM 770 KTTH?
I hate them too, but I mean, they must be self-loathing, honestly, if they're listening to my show. I'm kidding. You're all wonderful people, and I should not have called you any name, even though I mean it, but I should not have said it.
Keep it internal. Keep it to the chest.
Next time, when I have this overwhelming feeling to call out a bicyclist as an elitist SOB, I will not say it, but I will be thinking it. And honestly, I probably will say it. So I'm sorry for lying, setting up false expectations. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text. 1-800-465-8770. Welcome back to the Jason Rant Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really do appreciate it.
I really think you could have timed that better.
Oh, shut up. I couldn't remember where it did. You know what got me wrong? Got me off? I was trying to think, who is this? And I think it's 21 Pilots.
If it is, I'm not sure.
I think it is. And as I was trying to figure out, who does this? This is a great intro. It came up on me. And I had to speed up my... So I've got a story up at KTTH.com. It's an exclusive because that's what we do on this show. We break news.
Well, you do. I don't.
Well, yeah, you don't do anything. But I mean, I every once in a while, you will send an email on my behalf.
Sometimes.
Every once in a while. So I give you credit for following my direction because it's your job, which actually means I'm not going to give you credit for it. But I've got a story up at KTTH.com out of Tacoma, where the Parks Department, Metro Parks Tacoma, they decided to host a whites-only staff meeting in order to fight racism, which is odd to me and somewhat ironic.
It's the War for Peace campaign.
No, you know, it's just, oh, we're going to, I mean, maybe it's fighting fire with fire. Maybe it's, I'm going to fight white supremacy with white supremacy, with a whites-only meeting. They did this to discuss how white people can move from being allies to advocates, according to a spokesperson. Now, this meeting was in response to the May 14th mass shooting in Buffalo. That was inspired by racism, by a bigot. The chief equity officer for Metro Parks, her name is Norinda Rosario. She sent an all-staff email this week to alert white staff members of this upcoming one-hour meeting. Now, it is not a required meeting. She said, I am holding space for white staff to connect and share their thoughts and feelings around the Buffalo supermarket massacre. It took the lives of 10 innocent black people in Buffalo, New York on Saturday, May 14th. This is an invitation, not an expectation. Now, a staff member read that because she sent it to everyone. This was to the all staff. And she made a mistake of not putting it in the BCC line for your email. She put it just in the to form, which meant someone could hit reply all, which is what this one staff member did. In fact, I'm told that quite a few staff members there felt uncomfortable with this, but a lot of folks, understandably so, didn't want to come forward because they thought they would be shamed, which is exactly what happened to this one guy who responded. He got shamed by the chief equity officer. Now, a spokesperson told me that these kinds of affinity groups, these are groups that are segregated usually by identity, sometimes not, but for the most part, that's what they are. And she says, look, these affinity groups are common. And this one was to get white staff together because we wanted to have them become activists effectively. She said, the conversation for white folks was also intended to help grieve and process and heal, but also to share thoughts about racial violence and how white people can move from being allies to advocates in a conversation space without risk of further traumatizing BIPOC colleagues. There's not a single BIPOC colleague who is traumatized there because a white person might say something. The same way there's not a single white staff member who is traumatized because a black person says something. Traumatized? No. Maybe offended. Maybe annoyed, maybe upset, but no, not traumatized. I'm not using that language because words still have meanings. Maybe you're redefining this, fine. Now, I'm not entirely sure how a conversation that's meant to what'd she say? Grieve, process, and heal. I would have no idea how that could traumatize the non-white staff people. But the implication, I think, is condescending and actually racist. Hey, black people, you cannot mentally, emotionally handle what a white person might say. We're going to have to separate you out and put you into your own affinity groups. How is that not condescending?
Mr. Rants, may I pose a question?
Oh, fine.
All right. So that the last quote that you just said in the email from the spokesperson said that they want white people to move from allies to advocates. In the LGBTIAAQ 2++ whatever, the A stands for ally, right? But now they want us to be advocates.
It doesn't.
Doesn't it?
No.
What is it?
I'm pretty sure it's asexual.
Oh, I thought the A was ally. Isn't there one acronym that has ally in it? They always want us to be allies.
You look that one up. Maybe there's so many letters at some point I'm just going to start losing track, and I think that's one of them. I'm pretty
sure
that's
being
asexual.
An ally isn't good enough?
No, you got to be an advocate.
Oh.
Well, at least you don't have to do any of the new... you don't have to create a new logo if there's an A in it already. Just say it's now advocates. Yeah, and what does it mean to be an advocate? It means to advocate policy, advocate ideas that progressive race baiters want you to. She continued, this spokesperson, in an email to me. There were several conversation times for Black BIPOC folks and other for white folks. The intent behind the conversations for BIPOC folks was to create a process for healing, a space where people can talk freely, for Black and brown staff to grieve and process this incident and the toll of racism as a whole without the risk of the conversation diverting to console white people and serve their needs instead. Oh, okay. Gosh, these people are insufferable. They're insufferable. Absolutely insufferable. And the folks who work there pretty much push back immediately. Again, most of it was private. A lot of folks actually reached out to me. And they said basically that this is a pretty transparent partisan attempt to pit white people against Black people. And one person hit reply all. Someone forwarded it to me. He wrote, "White staff? This doesn't sit well with me separating fellow coworkers by skin color. It was a tragic event that took place, but I'd like to think we all fit under the same umbrella as Americans. Our hearts go out to those affected." Now, the equity director, Rosario, she responded 2 days later because she was very busy. She said, and she apologized to a degree, I guess, that she didn't have enough time to put more details into the intent of her original email, this invite. She said she wished she had done that. But she also scolded this guy for the audacity to respond. And boy, was it passive-aggressive, because she also made the point of saying, "Since you hit reply all, I guess I will too. It gives me the opportunity to get in front of more people," something like that. She said in part, "The Buffalo Massacre occurred on Saturday, May 14th, and from that moment on, my focus was centered on the health and welfare of Metro Park Tacoma's Black staff and not the comfort or needs of white people." Imagine putting that in an email. Seriously, imagine putting that in the email and pretending you're not a virulent racist. "My choice to include other people of color was based on the likelihood that they too have experienced racial violence and that this incident was likely activated their anguish, anger, fear, and frustration as well. Because I guess all Black and brown people are exactly alike." Right? Right, Rosario? All the same. Just one monolith. She then, in my view, unloaded on this poor staff member. She complained that she's not a counselor or a therapist. She's a facilitator, advisor, guide, and coach. But she was, as it turns out, happy that she upset this guy. Quote, "I'm happy to know that reading the words white staff only makes some people cringe. It means that your heart is in the right place. But I challenge you to do the work to understand why the practice of providing race-based affinity groups is a powerful tool for healing." Then she provided some resources where you can learn about how white people are all oppressors. There are these anti-racist tools for white staff members to use. One defends these racially segregated meetings, she argues, or the author argues, that all white people judge Black people to the point that Black expression and authenticity is hindered. And if that is how Rosario views white employees over at Tacoma Parks, it's no wonder staff members complained. And it's no wonder there are people who are deeply uncomfortable with this person being in charge of anything. The email, by the way, makes no mention of that other mass shooting that happened the next day, May 15th. What? Remember? The church? Oh, no. You don't remember that as much. Well, maybe you do, because we understand why this is important. But they don't really like to talk about that because it doesn't meet the narrative that they need it to meet in order to politicize it immediately. You see, in the church shooting, that was politically motivated, and it was a Chinese person against Taiwanese. Thus, that is unworthy of the attention, or I guess they don't have any Taiwanese employees that they might feel trauma after hearing about that. Or maybe people, I don't know, who attend church. This is ludicrous. And this is happening all over the place. So let's be clear about something. Race baiters like Rosario and woke government agencies like Tacoma Parks, they have become convinced that all white people somehow are to blame for any anti-black attack or anti-Latino attack or any racist attack. That is a bad faith and unreasonable position. Obviously. Is the black or Latino community to blame for gang violence when gang membership is overwhelmingly black and Latino? When they commit crimes, a black gang member, is the entire black community to blame? I would hope not. But that's the logic here. There's not a single white staff member at Tacoma Parks who's responsible for what happened in Buffalo. There's not a single Latino staff member responsible for what happened in Uvalde. Black staff members bear no responsibility for the mass murder in Waukesha or Waukesha. They're not responsible. The race of the murderer is not a reflection of the community which shares their race or, frankly, any identity. And that we have to say that in 2022 does not show progress. Boy, did we have a lot of progress at one point on these kinds of issues. Race relations? Not anymore. We have devolved to the point where we are now advocating for segregation. I guess segregation is the cool, hip new trend from the left. Good on you, guys. Good on you. 1-800-465-8770. If you text the keyword RANTZ, R-A-N-T-Z, to 1-800-465-8770, I'll send you a link to my story. I needed to get some eyeballs on it. Facebook was not happy with me today. Their algorithm is all sorts of screwy on my page, so I need some eyes. Text RANTZ to 1-800-465-8770, and I'll send you that exclusive. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Leaders at the San Francisco Unified School District, they held a powwow and they decided to stop using the term chief. They claim it's offensive to Native Americans. And then someone said, can we please also stop calling it powwow?
Yeah, where's powwow fall on all that?
That's also wrong.
It got banned?
Yeah, it was banned. I guess they figured out, let's focus on what really matters here in San Francisco, and let's completely forget about the fact that a whole bunch of school board members on the San Francisco school board just got recalled because they were focused on the wokeness rather than, oh, I don't know, teaching kids basic skills. So they focused on this. The spokesperson named, oh my God, Gentle Blythe.
Pardon me?
Yeah, that's her name, Gentle Blythe.
That's a name? That Gentle. Sounds like a fabric softener scent.
While there are many opinions on the matter, our leadership team agreed that given that Native American members of our community have expressed concern over the use of the title, we are no longer going to use it. There's not a single Native American person in all of San Francisco that actually complained about the term chief. I'm betting on it. I don't think it exists. I think that is completely made up. I think it is 100% completely made up. And the only person that they have is some white lady in whatever their version of Kirkland is, complaining about this. You show me the person. Show me the Native American. I want to talk to this person. I want to talk to him. I would love to meet this person. So wait, what now? You're complaining about chief? Really? Really? Chief, explain. I mean, sir, no, I can't. What am I doing? Can I say chief with you? While there are many opinions on the matter, our leadership team agreed. We have to move on. Okay, fine. Just stop this nonsense. A replacement term has not been determined, but Gentle Blythe sought to emphasize that dropping the word chief from a title was not a reflection of a downgrade in job status. Can we call them elders? Or no, we can't do that either.
Yeah, I think that's going the wrong way. Oh. What is the executive?
Are they an executive?
I don't know. I don't. What do you replace it with?
Well, I mean, first of all, again, these people are so dumb. Chief is not, they realize it's not a Native American word, right?
Only Native Americans use it, apparently.
It is not an Indian word. It's not an American Indian word. That's not where it comes from. We looked up. Well, Guy Benson looked it up and I stole it from him. But I just gave him some. I gave him some. Well, I was going to look it up, but he did it first.
And Guy did it for you.
He did it first. It's the origin of chief, 1250 to 1300. Middle English, Anglo-French is chief or chief. French, there's also a vulgar Latin word that we don't, because I'm assuming I'll get in trouble.
Well, you just said it like three times.
No.
And now you're saying vulgar Latin words?
No, there's a vulgar word in Latin for chief. That's a different word.
Oh, but chief is not the vulgar Latin
word?
That
is not the vulgar Latin word. Are we seriously? This is what we're doing here. This is what we're doing. And the funny part is it comes literally just a couple months, 3 months after a recall of the San Francisco Board of School Board members, all complaining about the people in San Francisco. They said the school board was too woke. And so the Unified School District decides, well, now that we got rid of all those wokesters, someone's going to have to take their place. We can't be recalled. Come on. What are we doing? What are we doing? What are we doing? And you know what? To be serious for a moment, what happened in Texas very clearly had to do with safety. Okay? So are you telling me in San Francisco, all of your schools, all of them, are as safe as they should be? Have you done that? Have you gone through that before you go over to this woke nonsense? Are your kids actually scoring as well as they should be? Because I'm looking at a story here that Lowell High School, which used to have the highest grades in the district, they saw a huge increase of D and F grades during the fall semester. 24% got one D or one F during the fall semester. That's not good, guys. Or no, I'm sorry, people. Can't say guys either. That's a gendered word. Who gets offended by it? I don't know. My God. Oh, no, we can't do that because we're godless in San Francisco. Can I have an opinion, too? Oh, no, I should shut up because we're about to go to a break. Okay, fine. The Jason Rantz Show.